This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York for the last time, Taylor. I get out of the house and I'm headed to Washington early tomorrow. And when we tape the podcast tomorrow, I might be a baggage claim in Washington.
Ooh, you know what? I never had a baggage claim Monday or anything like that. So I'm very excited. I'm excited for you to get out of the house and go catch a game. I know you've been champing at the bit over there. Anytime someone comes on, they're like, oh, I'm at spring training. You are just, you're a little, you know, a little bit of saltiness, some jealousy, you know, coming through the airwaves. I don't know if anyone's caught that, but.
Yeah, definite jealousy. No question about it. 2 days away from the start of the season and the clock is ticking. By the way, still no sign of a universal DH being implemented by Major League Baseball. Still no sign of expanded playoffs being negotiated by the union in Major League Baseball. And I'll say it again, as I've been saying all spring, it's insanity that those two things are not going to be part of baseball as we move forward. But that's where the relationship is between the two sides. Francisco Lindor has quite a decision to make as we move forward. I'm going to be talking about this with Sarah Langs. The Mets have offered $325 million over 10 years. Lindor's camp has countered with a request of $385 million over 12 years. This is the decision that has to be made because the deadlines that both sides have imposed sometime in the next 48 hours. Major League Baseball issued a memo to teams on Monday outlining relaxed protocols for vaccinated players, coaches, and staff members, creating a path for them to gather indoors, eat at restaurants, bring family members with them on the road, and mostly restore their normal lives after nearly a year of stringent health and safety policies. This would happen after 85% of Tier 1 individuals, in other words, the players and staffers, were fully vaccinated. Former number one Major League Baseball pick Mark Appel is joining the Philadelphia Phillies in a comeback. He signed a minor league contract. Rougned Odor, the Texas Rangers starting second baseman over the past 7 seasons, has been told he will not be on the opening day roster. And moving forward, the Rangers are going to have to eat the remaining money owed to him. The 27-year-old infielder has 2 more seasons and $24.6 million left on a 6-year contract, as well as a $3 million buyout for a $13.5 million team option in 2023. Felix Hernandez opted out of his deal with the Baltimore Orioles after it was indicated to him he will not be in the big leagues. All right, let's get to some good stuff from Bryce Harper.
I mean, he's a really impactful player. He has that potential. We've seen it. So we're just trying to get him back to that.
That Harper just crushed him.
How did that sound down there?
That sounded like Ruben Runs is in the house.
I was going to be a little disappointed if I didn't pick him.
That was pretty good, man. That's...
I'm just going to get a little bit more wet as I sit out here. That's all.
Yeah, that was Joe Girardi, the Phillies manager, being interviewed by Tom McCarthy as Bryce Harper hit that home run. Corey Seager had a nice moment.
That's not one he mishit.
Go ahead, keep going.
That's a homer.
That's not an easy angle to call from either, but you have, well, twice home runs from Taylor and Seager, his 8th of the spring.
Corey Seager's having a phenomenal spring training. Remember, he's eligible for free agency in the fall. Tigers and Yankees played yesterday, and there was a nice defensive play by Detroit.
1-1 pitch hit on the ground towards, and great stop by Castro to force it second to throw the first. Is in time for a double play.
Wow. I'll tell you one thing. Every once in a while, even in a spring training game, you see a dazzling play. And right there, Castro comes up with his ball off the bat. Everybody thought this was up the middle. Gloves it, gets rid of it. Plenty of time.
Ken Singleton, Paul O'Neill on the YES Network with that call. Well, today, speaking of the Yankees, we're going to start the American League East previews. Dan Schulman will talk to us about the Blue Jays. Meredith Marakovitz of the YES Network will talk to us about the Yankees, and Sarah Langs will break down the Francisco Lindor situation. But before we get to all that, check out America's Caddy on ESPN Plus, hosted by Michael Collins. Join the quick-witted, longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, part celebrity hangout, and full of laughs. Streaming now on ESPN Plus. And don't forget, you can listen to new episodes of The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. That's right, three podcasts a week, every week. Listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, a really interesting decision in the hands of Francisco Lindor and his agent, David Meter, now. The New York Mets. First off, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. We have opening day in 2 days. I could not be better. Absolutely not.
I know. Fired up. And there's just a lot that's got to happen before opening day, including this decision from Francisco Lindor. I was just going to lay it out. The Mets have offered $325 million over 10 years. Lindor's camp has responded with a request for 12 years and $385 million. And I was communicating, I've said all spring that since the Mets acquired Lindor, I really feel like Lindor has had the leverage. Like the Mets are not going to acquire a player like this unless they're prepared to pay him in a major way. But I think it's important for Lindor to remember that Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, has walked away from deals that he's considered to be bloated. You know, the George Springer negotiations, they only went to a certain part and then they stepped away. JT Realmuto, the catcher, I think in their eyes, he was overpriced. Maybe because they wanted to focus on Lindor. I don't know how he turns down an offer that starts with a number three, Sarah. What do you think?
I totally agree. I mean, I understand that there's so much to negotiation, and I completely agree that he has the leverage here. The Mets have been expected to make that big move, and the trade ended up being the big move. And when you have a new owner and all of this money that everybody is talking about, and the big move is a trade, you are absolutely expecting him to be extended. This has been the conversation since that day in January. But, you know, you asked me for my prediction on a deal or what I would give, whatever it might be, I guess about a month ago. And I look back and I said 10 and 320. So I'm very proud of that. I guess I was thinking along the right lines, at least according to those in Flushing. But I definitely think this is right around what people were expecting for him. So again, to me, seeing the reports about the 12 and 385 feels more like you need to push that negotiation as far as you can go. But I agree that he needs to not tread too far, because we've already seen the Mets not sign the big free agents this offseason, and this deal could totally get into that territory. But I will say, for everybody who's saying 325 sounds like a lot or whatever else, Dan Zimborski put out an article a couple of weeks ago trying to project what a Lindor extension might look like in terms of his production with his Zips projections. And he's projected for another 530 homer seasons over the next few years, which would give him the most by a shortstop. And he's projected with an above league average, so above 100 OPS plus through 2028. So the projections are certainly saying that the Lindor of maybe 2019 and prior offensively is going to be back. And that is worth keeping in mind for those who might be balking at even the 325.
So you have clearly demonstrated you're really good at projecting some of the salary stuff. That's for sure. So you can help me try to assess what his risk would be if he turns this down. Okay. Because I was thinking about this overnight, that if he turns this down, and he, let's say, gets hurt at some point during the year, or let's say, you know, he has one of those injuries, like he's hit on the hand by a pitch and it affects his production, or if he simply has an average year, how much could he potentially cost himself? And the number that I came up with was about $150 million, because I'm looking at where free agents were paid this winter. You and I have talked about how this fall, not only would Lindor be a free agent, but you get Corey Seager being a free agent, Carlos Correa, Javier Baez, Trevor Story. There's a supply and demand thing that would begin to work against Lindor a little bit. At this moment, he is the one Lamborghini on the lot. Right now, he's got exclusivity. If he turns down this deal and has any kind of a fall off, the numbers that and how they might drop could be dramatic. He's 27. He's not 24.
I think that there's a case to be made that even if he has an all-star caliber season or wins an MVP, that he might not necessarily be able to get back into this echelon with all of those guys on the market at the same time. And we've talked about how it's completely unprecedented, this many guys, this good, all at the same position. And I think that teams, I mean, it's just so hard if you're picking between all of them. If you're a team that needs a shortstop, you sort of know you're going to be able to get one of them. And I have to imagine that that would drive the prices down, because there's just so many options, as you were saying. So, I mean, maybe MVP caliber season isn't fair. If he has that, I think he will get in this level of money. But anything beyond that, even just a kind of average season, and all of a sudden, I think he's absolutely dealing in the low 200 millions potentially. And I'm really interested to see how that market plays out. But for those players' sake, I mean, I think they all must be rooting for Lindor to get extended right now too, just because, again, having fewer guys on the market who all play the same position, are all really good, or all really good offensively and pretty good defensively to great defensively, depending who we're talking about, they're very similar players in a lot of ways. And that just concerns me from their perspective and their agent's perspective in terms of marketing themselves to a potential team and making that pitch.
Yeah, as we sit here today, you know, you could understand if David Meter could extract a little extra something, maybe a few more million dollars in a signing bonus. And that way that, you know, this impasse that will have paid off in a little way. But I just, boy, the agents I talk to are like, he cannot walk away from that kind of offer. It's just, it's too substantial. Anthony Rizzo walked away from an offer from the Chicago Cubs, $70 million over 5 years. In speaking with reporters yesterday, he didn't outline the offers, but that was reporting subsequently that those were where the numbers were. And I know that the perception in Rizzo's camp was that the Cubs offer was far off what his market value would be. I don't know. He's 31 years old. He's going to be 32 years old when he becomes a free agent in the fall. And the way what we've seen with numbers for first baseman, those type of guys, I think that the Cubs offer is kind of within that realm. And I was thinking of Marcell Ozuna is maybe being a, you know, he's not a perfect comp because Rizzo is a great defensive player, but he's a corner guy, and he's actually, Ozuna's younger, and he got 4 years and $65 million. So I don't know if the Cubs offer is that far off from where the market is.
I think I agree. I mean, I'm looking at, they have his projections for the next 3 years, and he's projected to hit around 260 each of those years, tops out at 2.4 WAR on Fangraphs this year. I mean, he's not necessarily the carry the offense Anthony Rizzo that he never, I guess, really had to be, because I think his best years overlapped with some really good Chris Bryant years, but those 30 homer seasons seem to be gone, and he is older. That's the first thing I thought of when you said those numbers, is that we forget that, you know, he had that first year in San Diego and he wasn't really fully playing with the Cubs till he was 23. I mean, that was his first full season where he played like 160 games. And I mean, this is no knock on the player whatsoever. He's had a great career, but I agree that that feels about right, especially with how we've seen free agency play out over the last few years, where I think when you're in that absolute upper echelon, you are going to get paid. We were talking about Lindor. I know it's not free agency yet, but just in terms of contracts, Mike Trout has the contract he should have. Mookie Betts has the contract he should have. But I think that Rizzo now falls into that sort of second category, and we haven't necessarily seen those guys getting the types of contracts that maybe a few years ago we would see and say, really, for that guy? You know, so I think that era might be a little bit over, which unfortunately will work against him. But it's hard to imagine Anthony Rizzo in another uniform, even though he started his career with the Padres. So, I mean, it'd be very interesting to see what happens, but it also feels like if he hits free agency, he's not going back there, especially with the direction they're going in these days.
The one thing I wondered about, you know, you and I have watched a lot of games since they put up that massive scoreboard in Wrigley, where it seems like we've seen, you know, fly balls to right field or to center field or to left field for that matter, where they get knocked down. And you just see the expression on the face, especially of I've seen the left-handed hitters. And I wondered if, you know, the perception might be that, boy, in another ballpark, maybe his numbers are better. His numbers, Rizzo's numbers in his career are actually better at home than on the road. And, you know, by a decent gap, 902 OPS in home games, 813 in road games. So, and, you know, and I also don't think that his numbers will necessarily, unless he had a really bad year this year, that his numbers would necessarily fall, because there will definitely be teams. He's known as a great leader because of his elite defense. There will be teams that are interested in him. And if, in fact, the Cubs have a sell-off, Sarah, I was talking about this yesterday, man, could you see him being a perfect midseason pickup for the Yankees?
Yes. I mean, I was just talking yesterday about, you know, how you feel about Jay Bruce being the first baseman for the Yankees to start the season. And I was asked to sum up how I felt about that. And I gave a classic me waffling answer, which was fine for now, which was really how I felt that, you know, I think Jay Bruce has earned that chance. And he's definitely a guy I think we all expected would be a Yankee at some point, just even based on the player he is and his profile. But, and Luke Voit is expected to only be out for a few weeks, at least right now. I'm always interested by that when surgery is involved, because I can't imagine being on a baseball field 3 weeks after surgery. But if there were to be longer term questions, even just over the course of the season, I mean, that would be a great pickup. I would certainly be more than fine for now if it were Anthony Rizzo starting first base on opening day for the Yankees. Obviously, that's not in the cards, but that seems like a perfect middle of the season kind of pickup for them. And I know we talked about, when we sort of talked about projecting out the season and picks and everything, that they're one of those teams that you know, will absolutely expect to go make that move in the middle of the season if they need to, regardless of how much they might be leading the division by.
Yeah, think of all the ways that he would fit the Yankees. A left-handed hitter in Yankee Stadium, an excellent defender at first base, experience in a big market, lots of postseason experience. In fact, you know, Brian Cashman's probably already called Jed Hoyer. I'm just kidding. He hasn't. Yesterday, Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, announced that Dustin May has won the number five spot in the LA rotation in a competition with Tony Gonsolin, with Jimmy Nelson, and with Cy Young Award winner David Price. And if this doesn't demonstrate how deep this rotation is, my gosh. And Sarah, when you think about it, Kershaw, Buehler, Bauer, Arias, May in the rotation with Gonsolin, Price, and Nelson working out of the bullpen. Are you kidding me?
I mean, so many arms. But, you know, my first reaction when I saw this is why the Dodgers are the Dodgers, because they're willing to make this choice, because they make David Price, even after opting out of last season because of COVID and everything else, they make him feel comfortable enough that he's set in camp. He's willing to pitch out of the bullpen. And you can put the brightest young arm, the most live arm you have among those young players in the rotation, where he absolutely, I think, needs to be, just to learn. I mean, we've seen his stuff is great, but we've also seen mixed results. And I love the idea of him being able to learn on the job as a fifth starter for the Dodgers. Very few teams can afford to make that choice, even just from a competitiveness standpoint. I think that he is a great choice for a fifth starter on a lot of other teams that might have had him in the minors. I don't think that was even a conversation here. But the fact that they're able to say, hey, David Price, you're going to be fine being in the bullpen, and we're going to have Dustin May starting, because this is part of the future of this rotation, this roster, is just, again, it gets to their player development. And I think the way they handle players, and the reason that we've basically seen a dynasty, which I think I'm allowed to call it now that they won a World Series, I don't know, but at least a divisional dynasty over a bunch of years now. And, you know, Dustin May had a very interesting season last year. I mean, he had a 2.57 ERA, but a 4.62 FIP. So there's a lot telling you there that he was getting lucky, getting some good defense behind him, which I don't see changing. But, you know, in 2019, it was a little bit the opposite. His ERA was higher than his FIP. So I think there's a lot to be worked out there. He throws really hard, but he doesn't get quite as much swing and miss as we expect. So I'm really excited to see him get to figure that out against major league hitters.
And real quick, we got about a minute left. Yesterday, we got word that Major League Baseball and the Player Association send out health and safety protocol that those teams that get 85% of their tier one employees, in other words, players, staffers, to get vaccinations, will have their protocols loosened, you know, more time in restaurants, you know, family time, that sort of thing. And I did get some, you know, some players indicating me, boy, this, you know, is this Major League Baseball trying to drive a wedge here, trying to, you know, compel players to get vaccinations? My response was kind of like, well, these terms are negotiated with the union. What'd you make of this protocol?
Mostly it was just, I expected it, because we saw this happen with the NBA once a few teams started getting vaccinated. And I saw you put out earlier about how that was negotiated. And I think that's important background for people, just to know that it isn't specifically to compel you to get vaccinated or otherwise. I hope that everyone does choose to get vaccinated. I know that that's a conversation topic. We've seen some prominent athletes say that they're not sure. And I hope that we don't get as much of that from baseball players, just for my own, you know, my mother was an infectious disease doctor, and everybody else, we would like to see that not happen. But, you know, I just hope that people will remain cautious, because there's plenty of reason to still be very cautious, regardless of whether you're fully vaccinated and 85% or 100% of people around you are or not. But certainly, you know, any sort of sense of normalcy is what everybody is looking for right now.
Yeah. And I've heard from club officials, this was actually reporting I did back in January, that they expected at some point peer pressure would play a role here, where there would be players going to teammates going, come on, dude, just get the shot, so we can go out to a restaurant. We all just need to go get the shot. So we'll see how that plays out. Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much for having me.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Meredith Marakovich is the Yankees clubhouse reporter for the YES Network. They, of course, will have pregame coverage on Thursday on opening day. That'll start 11:30. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm great. I'm so looking forward to opening day and hearing some fans in the stands at Yankee Stadium for the first time in a long time, Buster.
Oh, boy. And it felt like, in watching the games this spring, like it made a huge difference. I'm curious. I mean, you were down in spring training. How different did it feel when you had at least some fans restored to the stands?
There was definitely more energy. And even speaking to the players going into that first spring training game, they said they can't wait to just hear a little bit of a buzz in the ballpark again. And even though it was 20% capacity, you heard the fans. You could hear the fans. Every now and again, you would hear a fan that was extra, extra loud. And it seemed like the mic always picked him up. But overall, it was a step in the right direction for baseball and a step in the right direction for everyone as we continue to move closer to getting out of this pandemic. But it's funny, I spoke to a couple pitchers that pitched in that first game of spring training, and they said it was actually a little bit weird getting used to people moving around behind home plate again. And that's something wow. I never thought of, but they were used to just empty seats or the cardboard cutouts, and now the people are actually moving. So not that it was a distraction, but a welcomed sight to see some action throughout the ballpark. And I think that's only going to get better with more fans as the season progresses.
All right, I'm going to hijack that piece of information for our opening broadcast. We have Mets and Nationals on Thursday. It'll be interesting to see how Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom respond to that. It felt like from afar one of the best thing in Yankees camp was Gleyber Torres reasserting himself this spring. What did you see?
You know, he has a tremendous amount of talent. No one ever questioned that. You thought that he can continue to make strides forward, but last year, a little bit of a hiccup. He wasn't himself at the plate. It seemed like he was chasing more than he ever had in the past, not really doing what he does best in making contact, trying to go to the middle of the field. It seemed almost like at times he was trying to build off of the home runs that he hit a season before. And Brian Cashman didn't mince words when I spoke to him during a Yankees hot show for the Yes Network and saying we thought he was out of shape the second time around. Everything got shut down. Some guys had an easier time staying in shape and working out than others. And Gleyber did not come in the best of shape. And they really feel as though that affected him, not only his mobility defensively, but also at the plate too. It carried over a little bit, maybe trying to do too much and getting outside of himself. And give Gleyber Torres a lot of credit. He was in Tampa the majority of the offseason working with Carlos Mendoza, wanting to get better at shortstop and prove he is the guy that can play that position at a high level every day. And you saw the lateral mobility was much better. He looked more in sync at the plate. He wasn't trying to do too much. He looked much more like his old self. And you expect that Gleyber Torres is likely going to have a pretty big year for the Yankees, as long as he and the Yankees as a whole can stay healthy.
And it's a proven year for him, of course, because there are all those great free agent shortstops are going to become available in the fall. And a lot of question about, you know, which among the big market teams is going to go after the likes of Javier Baez, Corey Seager, Trevor Story, and whether or not the Yankees would be in that group. The big question going into spring training, you know better than I do, was about the Yankees rotation. It felt like they got a lot of positive answers there.
No doubt about it. I mean, you looked at the rotation on paper and you thought to yourself, wow, they do have a lot of potential. But going back to the health aspect of things, you have guys like Jameson Taillon and Corey Kluber that are coming off of injuries, have not thrown essentially the entire season last year. And then you also have the shortened season of last year. And you wonder, how are you going to manage some of these guys as the season goes along? But with Kluber and Taillon in particular, not only did they look good, I think that's icing on the cake for the Yankees right now. And you know, nothing is won or lost in spring training, but certainly a sign that things are moving in the right direction for them. But more than anything, they recovered well and they didn't have any issues bouncing back to make their next start. That proves that they're feeling good, that they are indeed healthy. And if you imagine you have Gerrit Cole at the top, a healthy Corey Kluber, you're not exactly sure how many innings you'll get, but I'll take a healthy Corey Kluber for however many he can give. Jameson Taillon, who has high potential. And then Jordan Montgomery has made strides. Domingo Germán stood out this spring after not throwing for a year. He really, really looked sharp. I was surprised to see how great his command was on the mound. He certainly was a guy that won that fifth spot in the rotation, which he'll actually go a little earlier in the rotation, but a guy that belongs in that rotation. So I think a lot of potential. The potential is there. They have some youth too on their side should they need more starters, which every team, including the Yankees, will throughout the course of the season. But I think there's a reason to be cautiously optimistic.
There was a lot of debate in the industry about Gary Sanchez after the shortened season, as the Yankees kind of waited a long time before really making it clear for the public what their plans were at catcher. I know I talked with folks with other teams who said, you know what, they need to move on. And if they don't, they're just being stubborn. It's not working. But the Yankees stuck with Gary Sanchez over the wintertime into spring training. Tell me about his spring training.
Buster, you know what? So many people are like, get rid of Gary Sanchez. You have to get rid of Gary Sanchez. I would say, what's the benefit in this? Because this guy does still have potential. We've seen it in the past in glimmers, but we need to see it consistently. And if the Yankees were to get rid of Gary Sanchez last offseason, what really were they going to command for him? They were not going to get him, selling him when he had a bad season. So you looked at spring training. It seemed as though he came in better defensively. It was another offseason working on some of the things that Tanner Swanson wanted him to work on behind the plate, including that one knee down at certain times in catching. And I think that was something that he had a little bit of an injury last spring training, didn't maybe get the reps that he needed with it, and just looked kind of uncomfortable behind the plate with that new defensive philosophy and new defensive positioning. This year, he looks much more comfortable. To start the spring, the offense looked good. Now he's hit a little bit of a slide, but you know, this is the year where he needs to prove that last year is not who he is. He's a guy that can hit and hit at a consistent rate at this level. So I think you saw a lot of what you've seen from Gary Sanchez over the years. You have moments where you say, wow, this guy could really be an asset to this team and this lineup. And then you have other times where you look at it and you say, not again, what's going on here? Now, I choose to, you know, be optimistic heading into a season with the roster as packed as the Yankees is, but I think they're going to be, like always, a lot of eyes on Gary Sanchez. He seems to be, you know, a lightning rod topic for fans and for people throughout baseball. So he'll feel the pressure. There will be pressure on Gary Sanchez this year. There's no doubt about it.
The last 4 or 5 years, it seems like we could almost take for granted that the Yankees would have a dominant bullpen. That might be the area of most question, at least at the beginning of the season.
Well, yeah, the injury to Zach Britton, that certainly does not help the cause. The good news about that injury, it wasn't anything major in his elbow. They just need the incision to heal after taking out those bone chips. And then he needs to start throwing again, building himself up a little bit. He's a veteran guy. It shouldn't take him too long to get ready. But the Yankees aren't going to be overly upset if they don't have Zach Britton in April and half of May. They want Zach Britton in September and October. You have Aroldis Chapman, who's working on that split change that I think is going to play high dividends for him throughout the season. He's confident in throwing it, and it has been filthy. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Buster, but hitters have not been responding well. But then, you know, you have the injury to Justin Wilson. He started throwing again, another lefty in that bullpen, and they were looking to him to kind of provide some more length in that bullpen, and they don't know if they're going to have him opening day. The good news is it wasn't anything major in his shoulder, but there are some question marks with that bullpen and whether or not they can get, you know, Jonathan Loaisiga, a guy that they've used as a starter and a reliever over the years. They think he can make major strides in being a dominant one inning or two inning guy. Will that be the case? Chad Green, a guy that looked great during spring, but he's had his issues over the year as well. So if pitchers pitch to their potential, they should be okay, and they should still be relatively deep, but there are some questions with the injuries and then how much depth they really have when you're missing guys like Britton and even Chapman to start the season with that suspension.
45 seconds. How aggressive do you think the Yankees will be at midseason in terms of adding, knowing that they're bumping up against that competitive balance tax?
Well, I think it depends where they are midseason. They could be in a position where they don't necessarily have to add a ton, or there might be something that's just in front of them that makes a ton of sense that they feel as though is going to push them over the edge to win a World Series. I don't think the Yankees would hesitate in that case. I think ideally they'd like to stay under it. I don't think they've been quiet about that, but if it's a matter of winning a World Series or bumping over it, I still say they go for it, especially when you look at this roster, a roster that really seems as though it's built to win now.
Yeah, a name we were talking earlier in the week on the podcast, Anthony Rizzo. It's an interesting name to watch as the season goes along. Again, the YES Network pregame coverage on Thursday will start 11:30. Meredith, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, and I can't wait to see you out at Yankee Stadium for the first time in I don't even know how long, Buster.
It'll be awesome. Dan Shulman, my longtime friend and teammate on Sunday Night Baseball, and now play-by-play man on Blue Jays television and radio. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. Happy almost opening day to you.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so we're continuing with our preview of American League East teams. Today we're talking about the Blue Jays. How concerning is this wave of injuries we've seen with them at the end of spring training?
Yeah, it is a concern. I mean, some are more serious than others. Obviously, Kirby Yates gone for the season, so they never had him, but they lost a guy who was going to be their closer. Then you've got George Springer with an oblique strain that has been called grade two, but his symptoms don't appear to be that bad. And at this point, they haven't even officially ruled him out for opening day. I'm not sure he'll be there opening day. I think they'll be conservative with him, and it'll be a little while. Nate Pearson's a big one. He's had a groin problem that happened a couple of times during the spring. So he's going to be out for a while. A good young pitcher, Thomas Hatch, is out with some forearm and elbow discomfort, not related to the UCL. And then Robbie Ray slipped down a flight of stairs carrying his young child during spring training. Fortunately, his child is okay. He landed on his elbow. He'll miss his first start of the season. So they did do a really good job, Buster, improving their pitching depth during the offseason. But it's being tested here right out of the chute.
Yeah, I agree with you about the depth. In fact, when that news broke about Yates, being out for the season last week, I thought, oh, well, that hurts. But when you look at other options, their bullpen, they still have some really good arms there.
They really do. I think Jordan Romano is going to be one of these guys who's a household name around the United States with baseball fans by the end of the season. He could easily step into the closer's role and just take it over and run with it. He's got a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, 91-mile-an-hour slider. And when you watch him on the mound, it's hard to imagine that this guy was ever a starter. He's all of his mannerisms and quirks, and he's a reliever. Rafael Dolis did a really nice job for them last year. Ryan Barucki's now a reliever from the left side. His stuff really plays up. His fastball's 96, 97. And then they signed Tyler Chatwood. They signed David Phelps. And they've got some young guys who could be starters at the alt-site or AAA, but also could be multi-inning relievers in the big leagues. Trent Thornton's going to be one of them. They've got a young pitcher, TJ Zoik, who might slide into the rotation early because of some of the injuries. They did a really nice job improving their depth, and you know as well as I do, going from 60 games to 162, you're going to need every available arm you can find.
Now, you and I would agree, you can't take spring training stats at face value. It's a relatively small sample size, but I got to tell you, been tracking Tyler Chatwood this spring, and the numbers that jump out to me, 28 batters faced, one walk. You know that is not in keeping with his history. Tell me what you've seen in him and what you hear about him, because he's one of those guys, and we see this from time to time with a guy who's spraying the ball all over the place, finds a key, and he suddenly can command the ball and he becomes a weapon. If Tyler Chatwood can command the ball, then he's going to be a weapon.
Yeah, and part of it might just be, you know, going from the rotation to the bullpen. He, generally speaking, as you know, has been a starter in his career, but he's working exclusively out of the pen with the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays pitching coach, Pete Walker, is developing a reputation of being like a pitching whisperer right now. I mean, guys love him. Robbie Ray was the first free agent to sign this winter. He re-signed with the Blue Jays incredibly quickly, and every pitcher who comes in talks about Pete Walker. So Tyler Chatwood throwing strikes, as you say, is very important because he might be a three-out guy. He might be a six-out guy. He could pitch in the seventh or eighth inning. He could pitch in the fifth or sixth. But the stuff is good from what I've seen. I have not been able to be down at spring training, obviously, for various reasons, whether it's college basketball or COVID or border restrictions, that sort of thing. So, you know, we see what we can see on the games that are televised. But generally speaking, he's looked really good. And it was like, you know, 4 days into spring training when Charlie Montoyo started talking about him as a key guy in the bullpen. And I think he's another guy by the end of the season. If the Blue Jays have a good year, I think Tyler Chatwood's going to be a big part of it.
All right. We've talked about potentially some negative things happen with all the injuries. Give me the best development in your eyes for the Blue Jays this spring.
Well, until the injury, Robbie Ray was great. Steven Matz has been great. And I know he had a really rough year last year. But the numbers are great, and two or three of his starts have been televised, so I've been able to see them. And he is using all of his pitches. His location is great. His changeup has been terrific. So Ray and Matz are two big positives. And then you have to talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You know, as has been much discussed, he's about 40 pounds lighter than he was July of last year when the season started up. He's had a great spring. He's hitting the ball hard. He's getting it in the air. He looks more comfortable defensively. They played him a little bit at third, but mostly at first. And this may be the year. He's only 22, and everybody knows what he did in the minors, and everybody knows that while he's been pretty good offensively in the majors, he hasn't been what people thought he would be. So, I mean, I think Guerrero's one thing you really have to look at. And then Kevin Biggio who they gave him a new position this year. They signed Marcus Semien. He'll play second. So they asked Biggio if he could slide over to third. And Biggio's played there some, but not a ton. But he's looked very comfortable at third base. So I think, too, that's been a nice development as well.
And as we watch the Blue Jays during the course of the season, I think you'll agree with me on this. We saw how aggressive they were during the wintertime. They signed George Springer. They make other moves. They clearly are making their push now toward the, you know, try to challenge the Yankees. I got to believe that leading up to the trade deadline that they could again be one of the more aggressive teams.
I think so. If they're in the race, it would not surprise me at all if they went out and got a starting pitcher. I don't think they loved the value or the price tags on a lot of the starting pitchers this winter, which may be why they traded for Mats as opposed to signing somebody else. But Ross Atkins, the GM of the Blue Jays, has said repeatedly, listen, this isn't the only window to improve. There's July 31st. There's next offseason. There's the July after that. They are a contender now, but they're still ascending, Buster. Like, they're not a finished product right now. I think this year they're going to learn more about Vladdy, learn about Biggio at third. Can Robbie Ray get back to being the guy that he was in 2016, 2017? Can Romano handle the closer's job? Will Pearson get healthy and become a big contributor? So they've still got some questions to answer internally. And I think this year, while it is what they hope to be a contending year, it's still a gathering information year as well. So I agree with you. Whether it's July 31st or next winter, I think they're going to be active again. And they do have some very nice prospects who are getting close. Austin Martin, who you know well from Vanderbilt, of course, has yet to play a professional game, but I imagine he'll start at AA once the season gets going. Jordan Groshans, an infielder. And remember the name, two names, Semien Woods-Richardson and Alek Manoah, two pitchers who were absolutely stellar pitching during spring training this year. Manoah is a college kid out of West Virginia. Semien Woods-Richardson, a high school kid. They got him in the Marcus Stroman deal. Both were absolutely sensational during the spring. And it wouldn't shock me if one of them maybe wound up on the team this year. But if not this year, definitely next year.
All right, my friend. Always good to talk with you. I'm sure we'll reach out to you during the season.
All right, Buster. Be well. Enjoy opening day. Travel safe.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. And before we get into the tweets, real quick, we mentioned it yesterday. We will be mentioning it all week and throughout the season. There are a bevy of games on opening day on ESPN. You got the Blue Jays at the Yankees at 105. You got the Dodgers at the Rockies at 410. You got Mets Nationals, where our pal Buster will be at 7:09 Eastern. You got Houston at Oakland at 10:07 for the nightcap. And you can also listen to the Mets and the Nationals on the radio. Tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern time for full pregame coverage. Let's go to the tweets here. Adam Yaney at @A_Yaney writes in, which of your preseason predictions do you have the most / least confidence in?
Pretty easy to be confident in picking the Dodgers to win the National League West because they've done it every year since the turn of the century. Well, not quite that much. I picked the Angels to win the American League West. That's the pick I have the least confidence in. I don't know. If the Astros won, Oakland won, that wouldn't surprise me.
Next up, Corey Rukert at @CoreyR_12 writes in, with the season right around the corner, which pitcher versus hitter matchup are you looking forward to the most? I'm thinking DeGrom versus Soto.
Yep, 100%. And I am also looking forward to seeing Lindor's first plate appearance with the Mets. That'll be fun. And I would think that by the time he steps in the box, that he will have secured a future with over $300 million in it.
Take the bag, Francisco. Come on, don't be silly. Next up, we have Dean at Dean DeRoche. He writes in, Buster's head must have exploded just now as the Braves took their pitcher out in the top of the third, only to have him bat in the bottom of the third so he can see live pitching against the Red Sox. Very funny, Dean.
Oh, my goodness. It's just insane. We're going now. And I want to make this clear. Like, I grew up a fan of the Dodgers, big National League fan, and I love the National League rules. But I also recognize that this is what's going to happen. The universal DH is going to be in place, and I don't understand why Major League Baseball just doesn't surrender and say, okay, fine, we'll put it in for this year.
Next, we have P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. He writes in, will Arenado's presence in the Cardinals lineup help Paul Goldschmidt's numbers re-achieve what they were with Arizona?
Maybe a little bit. I don't think Goldschmidt is hitting at the level that he did when he was with Arizona. He's a different type of hitter. He seems to focus more on putting the ball in play and reducing his strikeouts. But let's face it, lineup protection, I think, can make a difference.
And last one for today, Andrew Campbell at Real Cam Drew writes in, "Hey Buster, is it possible that by season's end, Clint Frazier sneaks his way into the top 10 outfielders in Major League Baseball discussion? 30 home runs and 90 RBI seems totally possible if number 77 stays healthy all year and if his defense continues to improve. It could happen, right?"
I don't know about top 10, and not thinking of in that context, but I love how he's improved, Andrew. I think it's cool. I mean, one thing about players, about people, you can change. Like, you can make adjustments in what you do and for the better. And that clearly is what happened with Clint Frazier. I'm so impressed with his level of maturity. You know, we saw 2 years ago when he was criticized about defense. He was kind of touchy. He was very sensitive about it. And last year he came in like, you know what? Bring it on. I'm trying to get better here. And he got a lot better. Tip of the cap to that guy.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Shout out to the Bleacher Tweet Fantasy Baseball gang. We did our draft last night. My team is terrible. And I will definitely not win this league. So thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, Meredith, Dan, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.